Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I'm your host, Rob Oliver, and today with me is Katie Woodland. She is a maverick psychologist, a business coach, a TEDx speaker, and a best-selling author. She helps female entrepreneurs feel powerful as they create the business they love so that they can leave a lasting impact on the world. Katie, welcome to the show.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me, Rob.
I brought you on today, and we're going to talk about this idea that your past does not define your future. So I think the appropriate question to start off with is, can you tell us a little bit about your past?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the grand old age of 36, which isn't that old in chronological years. But for the first 21 years of my life, I experienced quite extreme emotional trauma, often on a daily basis. So I was bullied at every single school, and my dad was in the Royal Air Force, so we moved around the country, and it didn't matter where we were geographically, didn't matter which year I was in, which school I was in. I seemed to be the outsider who was bullied. So every time I went to school, I was subjected to lots of verbal abuse, physical abuse, being beaten up quite frequently. And on three separate occasions, did experience some quite traumatic sexual abuse. And even when I left school, I went into the world of work. And I think the reason I got through school was I had it in the back of my mind, as soon as I'm through this, I will be out in the real world and it will just stop. So unfortunately, as many people who have come through it out the other side knows that history repeats itself until you change yourself. So even at work, I was experiencing the same sort of bullying and harassment. And then one very interesting day in March 2004, I decided that I couldn't cope anymore and tried to run my car off the road on the way to work. And thankfully, the universe had completely different plans for me. And there was a traffic jam up ahead. So I got stopped by the universe and was able to come off. And that was a huge turning point in my life. And since then, that day I decided, number one, it was the first time I ever decided that I was actually going to live. Before, I was just here, but never made a conscious decision that I wanted to be alive. And then the second decision that I made that day was that I was going to find a way to do something that would free me and free other people who had, so people wouldn't have to go through what I went through. And that was kind of my driving force. And it has been for the last 15 years.
Wow. It was basically one of those things you were surviving every day with no real hope and no real purpose, just kind of trying to get through things. And when you finally decided, that's it, I'm done surviving, I don't want to anymore, the universe stopped you from taking your own life. And it was a time where really pivotal point in your life where you decided to move from just surviving to actually living. What was it that you began to do then that helped you to live and to have a purposeful life?
Well, it's quite different. So back in 2004, people didn't really talk about mental illness. And I didn't know that I was struggling psychologically and all of these things. I didn't know about depression, anxiety, or anything like that, because it wasn't spoken about. And in a way, that was something that has protected me from being trapped. So I didn't know, so I never identified with those sorts of things. And I always knew, because I was very blessed to have such a loving family, and I think that's why I lasted such a long time, was I had a loving family. So I knew that you could have these happy, healthy relationships. I knew it was possible, and I knew you could treat each other in positive ways, and I knew there was an opportunity for me to experience joy. I just didn't know how to do it. And it wasn't for a good 3 or 4 years until my youngest sister came home from college and she'd passed, and she said she was off to university to do psychology, and she spoke about depression, anxiety and mental illness. And that was the time I remember sitting there thinking, huh, that's what was I think I was mentally ill. And so that was kind of the realization that I get it, I understand it, there is a way out. And I'd found a way that I could then pursue to support somebody else. So it's really strange. You know, I had this pivotal moment on the motorway, but it wasn't until years later did anything actually shift, because I just didn't know what to do other than keep going about my business. So it's very strange. I was looking for a few years, but nothing really happened.
I think that so often, especially back in the early 2000s and before that, mental illness was always stigmatized. And if someone in your family had mental illness, you didn't want to talk about it. It was, that was the relative that no one ever mentioned. But things have changed. And talk to me then about your realization that you're dealing with mental illness, and how are you coming to grips with that? You're coming to understand the truth of what that is. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
Yeah. So, like I said, because I didn't ever be diagnosed, I never had the labels. I was always under the impression that, do you know what? I'm feeling this way because of these things that are going on. So if I can stop these things that are going on, then I can be happy. Because, you know, even if you're experiencing quite dark times, it's not every second of every minute of every day. There are dark periods, but there are also joyful periods. So you end up living this kind of parallel universe. So I knew it was possible. And because I was never diagnosed, I then never believed I had this illness. And so my whole journey was about just letting go and getting rid of all of that past stuff, because I knew that I don't need to hold on to it. Like, I can't change the past. I just need to find a way to let go of it. And it wasn't until I started doing my undergrad and my master's and working with people who are struggling with mental illness, did I start to have the realization that my huge protective factor and why I'm mentally free without ever having anybody else give me any therapy, without ever working with anyone else, the why I can talk about quite traumatic things and it genuinely not affect me, is because I never believed I was ill. I just believed my brain was doing things because I'd learned to behave in that way because of the events that had occurred. And it was really exciting because in 2007 is when all the information about neuroplasticity came out and the ability to change your brain and rewire your brain. So just as I was going to university, this whole neuropsychology was coming out and really coming into its own. And I remember sitting in many of my lectures where they were talking about, you know, you have depression, you have to just manage it, or you have anxiety and you have to cope with it. And I was sitting there going, well, that can't be true because I've fixed myself. I don't feel that way anymore. And I'm not managing symptoms. I don't have the symptoms. And so I think for me, this is the thing that frustrates me the most about scientific community and the medical community's inability to get across that we don't have mental illness for life. We don't have genes which predict and trap us in mental illness. That's things that we believed before we understood about neuroplasticity. And that was like 12 years ago, 13 years ago, we found out about this, and we just can't get it across that you are struggling right now because of the things you've experienced. So we just need to reverse the effects, rewire your brain, and off you go. It's very much like, and I always try and describe it like, you know, the first time you ride a bike, we are pre-programmed to stop ourselves moving forward on our feet. So, you know, you get on your bike and you're going really fast, and all you want to do is put your feet down. You don't think about using your hands to stop. And then over time, you learn to brake using your hands and you don't put your feet down anymore. And then all of a sudden, you are able to ride a bike, and some crazy people out there will do it hands-free, you know, no hands on the handlebars.
Right.
And all it is learning and retraining your brain to automatically behave in a different way. And that's the beauty and that's the magic of our brains, is that the way that we feel right now is not the way that we need to feel in the next 90 seconds or, you know, 2 hours or 2 days. But if we don't do things that will support ourselves to change, we can't change.
I'm hearing two things come out of this. Number one, you make a very powerful point that mental illness is not something that has to be a lifelong condition. It's just you deal with it and you cope with it and you try and manage it. It is something that in your experience, you can work through. And I don't know if the word is overcome, but you can get to a point where it's not dragging you down every day. The other thing I think about is so many people have a very glib mindset about mental illness, in which they'll tell you it's all in your head. You just need to think positive, think happy thoughts, and that will get you through this. What's your response to either of those suggestions?
When we think about mental illness like an illness, it's the same as saying when you break your leg and it repairs, you have broken leg disease. So an illness is something which is, you know, a pathogen, a virus, is something which occurs, but it's based on, you know, bacteria and viruses and things like that. So the same as when you break your leg and then it repairs, that wasn't broken leg disease. When your mind goes a bit wobbly, that isn't a mental illness either. The confusion comes and the problem comes because anxiety and depression are both, and everything else stems, when you really look into mental illness and how it, the trajectory, if you roll back everything enough, there will be a beginning, which is either anxiety based or depression based. And when you kind of ignore that, you collect loads of other things. It's, you know, you end up with hearing voices or, you know, developing other personalities, but there will have been traumatic event or traumatic events which started you on the road. And we all have a propensity to either anxiety or depression symptoms in the beginning. And they are naturally occurring defense mechanisms of the body because you're ignoring the things that are causing you harm. So you can't ever be, never have anxiety, because anxiety is real. It's an automatic biological response that the body's been building for hundreds of thousands of years. But you don't have to be ruled by those two different things. So you can overcome the trap of, you know, and you have to say the word mental illness, but it grates on me. So you can overcome the trap of mental illness and go back to, you know, using anxiety as it was intended, i.e. if there's a lion running at you, you want to trigger the fight, flight or freeze, you know, well, not the freeze part, but you want to trigger the fight or flight. That you need that. You just don't need it when you've got a deadline at work. So it's about allowing your body to actually use these super chemical and biological and psychological mechanisms as intended. And the whole positive thinking thing drives me insane, actually. So you can't positive think your way out of mental illness, and this is why so many people are so stuck. You know, we try affirmations, we try gratitude practice, and the problem is when we're using our thoughts to direct where we want to go, we're only using 5%. So the conscious part of our bodies, of our minds, about 5%. The 95% is our deep-rooted beliefs, which are trapped in past experiences, which are anchored to a feeling. And so we feel something, we take actions, we have thought, we build beliefs. And everybody's trying to, you know, think happy thoughts while they're actually feeling really negative thoughts. And we end up following the 95% because it's our subconscious that controls our actions. It controls all of our autonomic nervous systems. It controls the chemical reactions you've got in your brain and your body as your hormones. So even though you're thinking about doing something good, you will take an action which ultimately then reflects the feeling. So if we have to stop putting sticking plasters on gaping wounds, and that's what you do with positive thinking. You have to find a way to feel good, fun and exciting. You know, the three best ways to flood your body full of serotonin, clear out cortisol, is, you know, sing, laugh and dance. And they are used as therapeutic interventions for depression because they're so powerful. So, you know, do that, then attach that to a positive, you know, if you want to say affirmations, do it, but just don't do it when you feel bad, because you're triggering everything the wrong way, and we end up then feeling like, well, everybody else, it works for them, it doesn't work for me, I must be broken. And that's when we're getting stuck again.
It's very interesting what you're saying. I this is kind of a weird thing. I remember reading an article about dating, and it said, as a guy, when you're hanging out with a girl, only hang out with her when she is feeling good. If she's having a bad day, don't go and hang out with her. And it's counterintuitive, but the reason is you want her to associate your presence with positive experiences. And so that you're building a relationship where she associates positive things with you. I can't say that I necessarily agree with that idea, but it's a little bit about what you're talking about, where if you are down and you're trying to do these positive affirmations and you're still down, you're feeling like a failure, it is further contributing to those feelings of inadequacy and those feelings of downness, because I'm trying to do this and I can't even do this right. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And the other piece that you mentioned that I think is so interesting is referring to it as mental illness and the connotations that come with the word illness. And I'll share a personal story here. I had a spinal cord injury when I was 21 years old. And there was a doctor that came in and he kept talking about the disease that I had. And I was completely frustrated and I couldn't listen to anything that he said, because it's like, I broke my neck. I didn't acquire a disease. It's not like someone else can catch this from me. It's not like this is something that's going to grow. It's something that happened, very similar to what you mentioned with broken leg disease. And taking it and moving out of the paradigm of an illness or a disease that is contagious or that needs to be treated with any number of things, and it's going to be a lifelong experience. Very, very different way of looking at things. It's amazing. I appreciate your perspective on that. For me, then, we're all dealing with the everyday issues of life, right?
Yeah.
And some of those are difficult. We're dealing with obstacles, whether they're from, you know, physical obstacles, whether they're emotional obstacles, it's just the obstacles of work. Then if it's not just about saying everything's going to be okay, what are some tips or tools that you can give us for dealing with the difficult times that we go through in life?
So the most important thing to ever understand is that you are the most powerful person in your life. So it can't come, when it comes to healing your emotions and your physical health and your mental health, all three, the only person who can actually do it is you. If you can hire a personal trainer, but unless you're going to follow their advice, you will never get the body you want. You can go to an energy healer and then they give you a prescription of things you're supposed to be doing when you're at home. But if you don't do those things, you won't ever then feel good. So when we talk about things like illnesses, and when we talk about things very much like you're saying about your spinal cord injury, is that we give our power away to the other person. And as soon as we do that, we've lost, because they will be coming at your life from a place that isn't you. And no one person, even identical twins, have completely different experiences. And so we have to hold on to the fact that the only way I will ever have the life, the business, the relationship, all of the wonderful things that I want in life, is if I go all in and I commit every single day to doing one thing, just one small thing, that will put me in a place tomorrow, which gives me an opportunity for a better future. And I think it's really important that we hold on to, it doesn't have to be a big thing. So if right now you're struggling to get out of bed, you know, you don't want to be saying, oh, I'm going to be running a marathon in a month's time. Well, actually, your goal is just to get out of bed. And if you're even, and I say this to my clients, you know, even if you're out of bed for an hour and you go back, you got up. Like, that is that is powerful for you. So stop looking outside at other people and what they're doing, and look at your life where you want to go and say, okay, well, today I can do this one thing that it isn't going to solve all my problems, but it's going to take me one step further. It's going to take me one step closer. So I am a huge fan of audio, like podcasts and audio self-development books and spiritual books that are spoken to me. And I will listen to those while I'm walking the dogs. So the first thing everybody should do as soon as they wake up is just move. And I know I'm, you know, here talking about mental health, but, you know, we don't leave our brains at the door. We are a single entity. And when you get your biology moving forward, your brain kind of just catches up. So if you can take control of your feelings, your actions, and your conscious mind at the same time, which you can do through, you know, a 10-minute walk while you're listening to, you know, Blinkist or Read It For Me, where they kind of digest all the, they take all the waffle out of books and give you just the hard-hitting stuff. There's no way when you come back from that 10-minute walk, are you the same person? You cannot make the same decisions as you were going to, because you now know something new. So I would genuinely say, get into the habit of doing a 10-minute walk, 12-minute walk, listening to something which is going to give you a spark of inspiration, a spark of hope. Definitely incorporate 5 minutes of singing, laughing and dancing into your day, because you cannot feel good unless you've got serotonin in your body. That's biologically impossible. They're the easiest way, fastest way to make it happen is through those things. And they're free. You know, they're the best things to do. And then to ensure that you are moving forward long term. So both of those two things will give you good feeling in the moment stuff. So your next step is to kind of cement it. And that's when you do affirmations and gratitude practices and things like that. But don't do it in your head. If you're struggling, don't do it in your head. Journal it. And the reason why, if you're writing it down, is you're still controlling your actions. You're controlling the conscious focus, and your subconscious will kind of get on board with what you're doing, and you'll see images in the back of your mind as you're doing these things, and then it starts flooding your system. So if you're really struggling, step away from trying to do things that are relying on 5% of your brain and just get everything engaged. And that's what I make all of my clients do. That's their routine from day one when they start working with me. And you know, most of my clients who work one-to-one with me, they've attempted suicide multiple times. So these are very unwell people. And just by doing that every single day for half an hour max a day, by 4 weeks in, they're no longer having suicidal ideation. Usually their anxiety and depression is halved on a clinical scale. Like, the power of those things is astronomical. And I know probably only 2% of people who listen to this podcast will take it on board, because it seems too easy.
I understand what you're saying. So let me highlight a couple things that you said. The one is that part of the success is setting small goals. You're doing something small every day that you can actually accomplish. And my guess is that it would be something that you could build on. So if someone's having trouble getting out of bed, and they do get out of bed, but it's only for an hour, okay, that's an accomplishment for today. And then tomorrow it's get out of bed and make yourself an English muffin, and then it's something that would be, you can build on those small steps that you're doing every day. The other piece that I was fascinated by what you said is taking those positive affirmations and doing journaling with them, because I have heard so many people talk about doing chants, and I'm not a chanting person. And so I can't imagine myself standing in front of the mirror. I've tried it. I've stood in front of the mirror and tried to say positive things, and I just feel so goofy and silly, and I can't do it. But when you're sitting down to write something, it's a way of getting your thoughts out. It's a way of, you know, it's happening both as an inner dialogue, and then as you write it, you are seeing it and absorbing it back in. I love the concept of journaling. Are those the, what you see as the steps to success? Is there anything that you, you know, that you're really suggesting then? Is it just that getting one thing done every day?
Yeah, I mean, so the only way to succeed is by moving forward. And, you know, it's you have to sit down and work out where you want to go. If you're struggling, you can't do that yet. Your brain's not functioning enough to do that. So when working with somebody, we kind of don't do a 12-week plan until we get to the end of the 12-week program, because we have to make sure that everything else is aligned first. So right now, you may not know what your future looks like, and that's okay. So the only thing you need to make sure you're focusing on is feeling good and doing one thing that's going to benefit your life, maybe in the next half an hour, maybe tomorrow. And don't feel guilty if you don't make it. So this is the other thing. Don't feel guilty if you don't make it. There is always tomorrow. Just try again, start again. So genuinely, the only thing everybody should focus on every single day if they want to succeed is to feel good before they take any kind of action. And if that takes you 10 minutes, if that takes you 4 hours, take the 4 hours, because those 4 hours are going to guarantee you success, because the actions you then take will be ones that are bringing about the same sort of feeling in the future. Regardless of whether we take actions from a place of positivity or negativity, we will then reflect that back to us. If we make a decision based on fear, chances are we will end up seeing more results which will bring in fear. So tune into how you feel, make yourself feel awesome, then take action. And if it's only a 5-minute action, know that because you did it from a place of feeling good, it's going to bring about more good.
Fantastic. Kitty, you have shared some very, very thought-provoking ideas today. I love the perspective that you're coming from. At the end of every show, I kind of reassess and say, we've established that you are definitely smart. I have definitely learned from you, but we close each show out with 3 questions to establish your humanity, just to prove that you are a real person and just give us some insight into who you are. So first question for you is, where's the next place on your travel bucket list?
Oh, now I don't like traveling. I'm a home bod. So if I was going, I will travel to, I don't know whether you have them over there. We have, so we have like English Heritage and National Trust. So we have old buildings and castles that you can go to. And so as soon as the lockdown is lifted, I will be getting out my National Trust card and taking a day trip to maybe Roughton Castle, which is around the corner. But I'm not an actual traveler, so maybe up the motorway, but it's not something I've ever been interested in. I love here so much.
I understand that. You mentioned dogs. Do you have multiple dogs, and what kind?
Yes, I have 3 big rescues. So I have a Neapolitan Mastiff, who is a huge grey boy who weighs more than me. I have an American Bulldog, and I have a Staffy, and they're from age 3 to 8, and they're all boys, and they're all boisterous, and they've all had years and years of rehabilitation, but I wouldn't change them. They love me even if I'm in a bad mood, so they can stay.
Last question, what is your favorite comfort food?
Oh, okay. So if I'm having a bad day, I will, this is my bad day remedy, onesie, Disney films back to back, tub of ice cream, and possibly a bottle of Prosecco, depending on how bad it is. And that is not a mentally healthy routine. That is just if you're feeling so down, you just can't be bothered with everything. And sometimes we need that because we've worked too hard, we're exhausted. So shut down for a day, cry your eyes out at Disney, feel empowered, wake up the next day feeling awesome because you've let everything go.
Phenomenal. I really appreciate you being on the show. You have a resource library that's available for the listeners. Can you tell me a little bit about how they can get a hold of you and how they can get a hold of some of those resources?
Absolutely. So if they head to www.katiewoodland.co.uk/offers, they will end up in the resource library. And so on the library, there are things for perfect health, Perfect Wealth and Perfect Happiness. And that comes from my series. So depending on whether you're struggling in your health, whether you're struggling with to attract the business, or whether you just want to feel good, it's all kind of catalogued for you. There's guides, there's walkthroughs, there's video challenges. So it's about you being in control of your journey and picking the things that you most desperately need to get you forward. But also you'll be able to get in touch with me on social media and all of those things. Get everything on my website. It's the easiest place to find me.
Wonderful. And I'll put links to that in the show notes so everybody can find your website that easily. Katie Woodland, you have been a fantastic guest. I appreciate you being on the show. You have been listening to Learning from Smart People. I am Rob Oliver, and I leave you with this reminder: when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.